The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hello and welcome to IGN's Horizon Forbidden West PlayStation State of Play post-show, all part of IGN Summer of Gaming. I'm Jonathan Dornbush, the host of Podcast Beyond, and all summer long we'll be bringing you exclusive gameplay and reveals and exciting first looks at the hottest new games. But right now it's time for Horizon, and what better way to discuss it than with a special episode of Podcast Beyond, as we just got our first look at official gameplay of Horizon Forbidden West, the gigantic new sequel from Guerrilla Games and one of the most anticipated PlayStation 5 games of the year. At least we hope it's still this year. We'll talk about that in just a second. But with me to yell about how awesome Horizon Forbidden West looks, I'm joined by Lucy O'Brien and Mark Medina.
Hello.
Hello.
Jonathan Dornbush. That was so much fun.
It was great. Yeah, I want to get some initial reactions before we jump into a little bit of the nitty gritty, because there's a lot to jump in there. But yeah, just sort of basic overview reaction to that. Lucy, you reviewed Horizon Zero Dawn originally for us back in 2017. What did you think of this presentation?
A long, long time ago. I thought it was fantastic. I think that it was a very orchestrated vertical slice. You know, it showed us like little bits of everything. It didn't outstay its welcome. There were, of course, more things I wanted to know. But like what we saw is so exciting, particularly with regards to climbing, but we'll get into that in a little bit, and just general traversal. I think those are the things that thrilled me the most. Just getting around this world seemed there were so many more options. There's such a variety of ways to move around this world. And that's what really, that floated my boat.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And Mark, how about for you? What were your sort of big takeaways from it?
Yeah, it was actually exactly what I thought it was going to be and exactly what I wanted. I wanted 14 minutes of like super varied gameplay, and that's what we got. It was like every minute was something new. It's like, hey, we're going to show you the water. We're going to show you climbing. We're going to show you a few new tools. We're going to end with a big boss fight. It was basically exactly what I was hoping for, and it's what we got. I love these, like, of course everybody loves the state of plays where it's like, hey, we're gonna show you all these different games, but I love these deep dives when you know excitement for a game is high and you know that it's coming soon. Hopefully we'll get into that later. I love this, like, hey, here's 14 minutes of like crazy varied gameplay. Who knows if this is a playable moment? It seems like it probably is. But it was just like a quick overview of a lot of different things. I loved it.
Yeah, it was a really smart approach, I think, to give us a overview of what has changed and what hasn't, because obviously this is a sequel to the original Horizon Zero Dawn, but with it coming as the first one on PS5, I'm sure they're going to want to get newcomers into the game. I do want to, of course, address the fact that it ends, you know, it reaffirms it's coming to PS4 and PS5, but no firm release date. Did that shock either of you? Lucy, I guess I'll start with you.
Were you expecting...
to kind of not know.
I was very sure of myself that we were going to get a release window, you know, whether it was like Q4, like just something really generic. So I never expected a firm date, but I thought, you know, Dorna, you were just saying earlier that with most of these state of plays, we kind of tend to get the game fairly quickly after, you know, there's one of these kinds of deep dives. So I was expecting, yeah, a window. It's a shame we didn't get one, but I'm not complaining considering what we saw.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Mark?
Yeah, I didn't expect, I would have been fine with a window. If I was expecting anything, it would be a window. I'm not surprised we didn't get anything at all. I definitely didn't think we'd be getting an actual release date. It's weird when they do these state of plays, like, you know, we have to remember that E3 is weeks away. It's coming up. It's almost here. You have to assume that even though Sony is not part of E3, they usually do a conference around that time where they have a lot to show off now that a lot of their launch stuff is done. And, you know, we have God of War, Horizon, stuff like that. And so they're not going to be able to show 14 minutes of gameplay in a conference like that. Those conferences are meant for like trailers and stuff like that. And so I fully expect them to be like, hey, we have this gameplay we want to show off. We want to remind people that this game exists. Cause you got to remember the trailer for this game is like 9 months old already. Like this game has been around for a while. So the fact that we're finally seeing gameplay for it is super cool. But yeah, I fully expect for them to do a bigger conference where they're going through a bunch of different stuff. And that's where we're more likely to see at the least a release window, at the most an actual release date.
Yeah, absolutely. I am keeping up the PlayStation blog and Twitter just in case, because they do quite have a knack for revealing things afterwards. So we'll see if anything happens. But that final splash screen that was part of the footage, you know, it just showed the two, a PS4 and a PS5, said it's a PlayStation exclusive. I think reaffirming, especially, you know, with some games coming to PC, like the original Horizon Zero Dawn, that this is launching on PlayStation specifically and not, you know, co-launching on PC. There's no date listed. There's no 2021. There's a 2021 copyright, but that's all we have to go off of. So I'm not going to go into any conspiracy theory Charlie Day at the board. There is no Pepe Silvia sort of mode just yet. But I'm hopeful it comes this year. I think this would be like a really great sort of fall open world game to get lost in. But of course, the original came out in February of 2017. So it's also a great game to have at the beginning of the year when you're craving sort of like a big world to get lost in after the fall rush.
Well, and it's definitely like smart to keep an eye on that stuff. I don't think that they'll bury a release date anywhere. They could probably mention something like, yeah, Windows, or the window is still 2021. But I do remember the PlayStation Showcase, you know, the PlayStation 5 Showcase, they show Spider-Man, they show Horizon. And then it was like the Japanese PlayStation blog was like, by the way, these are also PS4 games. And people are like, wait, what? We thought these were PS5 games. So it's definitely been this like trend of theirs to be like, oh, by the way, it is coming in 2021.
I don't want to say it
on our big show.
I actually can bring in Guerrilla Games that themselves did tweet, thanks for watching our gameplay reveal. We don't have an exact release date just yet, but development is on track and we'll have an update for you very soon. Thank you as always for your ongoing support. So that to me, at least probably does mean still 2021 is the target, is what they're aiming for. But we will have to wait a little longer till we get info on that. I do want to, of course, jump into the actual gameplay we saw, as you both were mentioning. I think this was a really great slice of gameplay to give us a whole variety of different things to talk about. This felt like one of those big marquee sort of like PlayStation presentations I'm sort of used to at E3. And you know, just everyone getting to see that all that at once is really, really exciting. And the one thing I want to talk about, sort of go off your point, Lucy, was the environment and both traversal and this environmental detail. What was, I guess on the, you know, traversal side of it, what was really striking to you about what we were seeing from how Aloy is getting around this world?
I mean, to me, you know, one of the things that I really dug was the verticality and the use of like high and low space. So the fact that, you know, she was climbing and then plunging into the water and going like right down into the water, but also the sort of the new means in which she can climb and move around these environments. The zip hook, I've just seen it, so I'm not sure what the official word for this is, but the hooking to you know, a ledge is really cool. And again, that little glider that she has is really cool. One thing that I really hope they do is play a little bit more with sort of air traversal. So I'm stoked to see this glider. I still have really high hopes that we're going to see actual like flying machines that you can ride. Like, that was what I wanted from the original Zero Dawn. And it was honestly because the original was so good that I was just like, how could I make this? How could I imagine this even better? And for me, it was being able to ride like a Glint Hawk or something, you know, actually being able to ride a machine through the air. Again, mm-hmm. I'm stoked with how they've expanded her sort of traversal repertoire. But I do hope that like that focus on air traversal is blown up a little bit more, just for me.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you, and we're just about to go to a break in a little bit, so Mark, we'll get to your thoughts about the traversal just in a little bit. But yeah, I'm very much there with you. I thought the addition of the glider, and we'll probably talk about this more after the break, of you know, the Horizon to Breath of the Wild comparisons that happened with the first game, adding in a glider certainly doesn't help the case. But I think it is great to see this addition, because you're right, especially with them now going underwater as more of a focus, which we got and we'll talk about as well, being able to also get into the air a bit more. We were seeing mm-hmm. some really high pillars of land off in the distance in the water, and mm-hmm. presumably you're going to have to be able to get to one of those relatively easy, and what better way to do that than maybe on the back of a Glint Hawk or another flying robot machine. That's kind of my hope there. We'll have to see where they take things with that. I have a feeling there will probably be some more surprises, because we only got a pretty small number of, for lack of a better term, the robot dinosaurs. In this bit of gameplay, and we're going to talk about those as well as a bit more of the environment and the gameplay and the combat, because there were some small tweaks in there that I think will hopefully go a long way for quality of life. But we'll be tossing right to a break in the meantime, and we'll be talking much more about Horizon Forbidden West after that.
Can't wait.
Welcome back to IGN's Horizon Forbidden West State of Play post show. I'm your host, Jonathan Dornbush, and this is all part of IGN's Summer of Gaming. And with me to talk about all of that awesome Horizon footage we just saw are my good pals, Lucy O'Brien and Mark Medina. Now, just before the break, we were talking a little bit about environmental detail. And Mark, I did want to get your thoughts on sort of your general impressions of the traversal mm-hmm. and everything we saw.
Yeah, so you know, Lucy pretty much covered a lot of it, where it seems like a lot of, you know, Horizon Zero Dawn is a very, I don't want to say flat game, but because there's definitely some mountains and some hills and stuff like that, but it's a very wide game. There's nothing underwater. A lot of the climbing was very scripted, I guess you could say. Like, you can only climb in very specific points. If there was like a structure, there was a reason to climb that structure. It wasn't just like, I want to climb it. It was like, you're climbing it because you want to get on top of a tall neck or something like that. And so the fact that you can use her focus to try to see, you know, it's not necessarily free climbing. You're still seeing those like little yellow notches, and it's showing you where you can. But it's like the fact that she was just surrounded by trees, and you just see those notches everywhere, and she just like climbs up them and then dives into the water, like that makes the game so much bigger, because it's like, even if the map were the same size, now there's an underwater map, and now there's all these high up areas. And then there's also been so many comparisons to Breath of the Wild, even though I firmly believe that the games couldn't be any more different, but them adding a glider, I thought was really funny. I think it looks really, really cool. It's very on brand. It's super techy and stuff like that. So yeah, I think the traversal, I also, you know, there's a little bit of parkour in there. You see her kind of like jump onto a branch and kind of like, you know, hoist over it, and then the hook shot there. I think it looks really, really cool. I think it looks really, really fun.
Yeah, overall, it feels much more fluid, which I think is probably the biggest mark against the original in terms of its traversal, you know, the Breath of the Wild comparisons notwithstanding, of it could be a little bit stilted. And here it feels like there are more options to get around. It's quicker, mm-hmm. it's smoother, and generally will be more useful both while you're exploring, but also in combat. And so I do want to talk a little bit about combat, because there's a lot that we saw here. We saw essentially two main fight sequences. One was with more human characters, and one was with humans riding on the back of a Tremor Tusk. Mm-hmm. I want to start with the human only fight, which started out from a little bit of a like stealth section. And Lucy, I want to start with you. I think for me, the human combat, like human to Aloy to other human combat, was one of the weaker parts of the first game. It was obviously always like so much more fun to go head to head with a few different robots and figure out how best to attack them. This felt like they're trying to, like, that they're directly addressing that here. What did you think of the human encounter that we saw?
Yeah, I mean, it was very Last of Us-y, but we sort of have established that kind of style of gameplay is very Sony first party. You know what I mean? Like, this, what we're seeing right now is classic Sony first party action adventure. It looks cool. I mean, again, I've never been super invested with the human to human stuff, just like you. But I like, you know, I like the stealth stuff. I like the fact that she now has this sort of, again, it was called something and I completely missed the official name, but it's like a limit break, something mm-hmm. akin to a limit break.
The Valor Surge.
The Valor Surge.
Valor Surge, of course. Right. You know, it looked fluid. I mean, you can see here, it looks fluid. It looks graceful. You know, the proof is when we get our hands on it to see how it actually feels, but like mm-hmm. everything that I can see happening right now is really promising in terms of upgrading that rather pedestrian, like human to human combat in the first game.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and we're getting a little bit of a look at the Valor Surge. It's going to be hard not to just call it a limit break. I think we're while we were watching
I like
it.
Shouted out while we were watching. I was like, "Whoa, she has a limit break! What?"
And that's just all it is. And it looks cool. Like, I'm all for mm-hmm. those like flashy moments where they get to show off the detail in mm-hmm. her weaponry and her costume and just everything in the environment. It's a really smart little touch. But yeah, Mark, I was curious about your thoughts on what we saw from that human encounter, because for me, I think in the first game, like bringing in the staff for Hit always felt very slow and mm-hmm. you know, a bit removed from the rest of the combat. Here things look more like everything gels together. What did you think of the look of it?
Yeah, so when we were watching the gameplay, I yelled out loud. I was like, whoa, this is like Last of Us. Like, they're like having a conversation. I fully expect that eventually you'll be sneaking up on people and that you'll hear like, hey, Rick, did you check those things? And he's like, yeah, I got it. And then it's like, you kill one of them and they're like, oh no,
my
Richard's dead. You know, trying to make you care about these characters that you're just blindly murdering. But yeah, exactly what Lucy said, where it's like, or both of you actually, the combat in the first game, fighting a robot and fighting a human, you know, the combat was designed around fighting the robots, so then you mm-hmm. just use that moveset against the humans, and so you're just trying to get headshots and you're like throwing traps and stuff at them, but it never felt like it was designed to actually fight other bandit camps. This definitely felt like fighting a robot versus fighting a human are drastically different. The camera moves in a lot tighter. She has a completely different moveset. The Valor Surges look incredible. I can't wait to see what more she has in her arsenal. But yeah, I think my favorite part of the human fight was when she got on that dude's chest and kicks off of it and it goes into slow motion, and then while she's in the air she's like pelting him with arrows. I actually do 100% believe that stuff like that is in the game. You know, it looks very cinematic, but a lot of the moves you did in the first game looked very cinematic, and so yeah, I love that fighting humans is going to be different this time around than fighting robots. She seems to have a moveset tailored towards human encounters.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. Basically, it feels more designed for that. I think you're absolutely right. And it feels more purposeful with what we're seeing here. And obviously, this is just a small slice. We might mm-hmm. end up fighting a bunch of raiders and it is just pelting them for headshots and hoping it works out. But I liked the mix of that juxtaposed with the massive Tremor Tusk fight, which felt mm-hmm. a little bit more classic Horizon. For sure, yep. But just amped up in a way that really excites me. For me, at least, the things that stuck out were just the sheer number of switching that had to happen to really take on what was essentially a robot enemy with humans atop it, and the layers of that, as well as sort of the destructibility of the environment around it.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Lucy, what stuck out to you from that Tremor Tusk battle?
Well, I mean, I do want to say I'm going to have a little whine here just because I really like the look of the Tremor Tusk. And the thing is, we knew that the Tremor Tusk was coming because it was revealed in the reveal trailer. And I kind of wanted something a little bit bigger in scale, because that for me is what like makes the Horizon Zero Dawn experience, is like this tiny little Aloy going up against this huge, you know, skyscraper sized thing. But with all that said, I thought the combat here looked wonderfully varied. I loved the use of the spike thrower and the gravity well and the goo shot. Was the one that we were just saying, like, that I love the goo grenade. I mean, you know, they've clearly paid a lot of attention to mixing up new ways in which to take down these machines, which they kind of had to do, right? Like, if it was just the same arsenal that she had in the first game, like, we're all very used to that, and obviously these machines are designed a little differently this time around. And I really like the fact that it just, again, it was like the same as Traversal. It just looks like she has more in which, you know, more to utilize this time around. And I thought it on top of that, it completely promised that same kind of like breathless combat encounter with a massive machine that just, you know, that adrenaline heart pumping fight that you can have in this game. And I think it looks great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot going on there, and for me it was the exciting combination of getting to see Aloy basically trying to run away and get some, you know, relief for a second. I really liked that balance of it. I'm totally with you. I hope with this new arsenal or, you know, the new arsenal matches the new enemies we're going to have to fight, because we're seeing a lot of different robot enemies, and we'll get into those in a little bit. But yeah, Mark, just briefly, how was the combat for you?
Yeah, so like this fight is kind of like your classic Horizon. It's kind of like your classic Horizon fight, where it's like this, you start and this monster is huge and he's intimidating and he seems to have all the advantages in the world. And then as you can see here, like this is, you know, talking about the B-roll you're seeing on screen, this is a drastically different Chimertus than you saw a minute ago. Like he's losing. He's got his like little basket thing knocked off of his head. You know, you're stripping away his armor parts, and it's just that classic Horizon where you start to feel bad, because it's just like they come at you and they have all these guns and they have all these armor, and you just very slowly, like kind of Monster Hunter style, you just like pick them apart and blow their pieces off of them. And so you can see here at the end, it's kind of like this like desperation where it's like it's trying to like do anything it can to stop this little redheaded creature from like blowing its bits off, and it loses. So it's kind of like that classic, like you start to feel bad for the robots at the end there.
it's a little bit of the Shadow of the Colossus vibe of like, I don't feel good about what I'm doing right now. But also it looks really cool, so I'm gonna keep, you know, attacking. Yeah. But yeah, you mentioned the sort of the takedown of the human mount and their sort of like their basket that they were in. I loved the effect of all of that happening. Like, to me, that feels like one of the most new gen like PS5 capable things, to be able to see all of that collapsing while the fight's going on.
We all like audibly gasp when it leans forward and you just see that all come off. I was like, oh, whoa, like that's so cool looking.
I mean, the designs of these things are so weird and intricate. Like, that's what I always loved from the first game. And I you know, Mark, you said that this was like a classic Horizon sort of fight, and I so agree. Like, and that, I'm so pleased that they're not messing with that formula, because that is what makes Horizon a Horizon game, right? Like, are these huge scale fights with these intricately built like Lego machines almost, where you're, you know, shooting bits off and then revealing other bits underneath until you get to that like explosive gas canister underneath their right leg or something. You know what I mean? It's just like, there's so, it's such a classic formula, but it works so well. And even just watching this, my heart was like thumping, because I was sort of taken straight back to those encounters from the first game.
Yeah, it's definitely a great sort of, as you were saying, classic Horizon style combat. And I really can't wait to see, this is only the first big enemy that we're seeing, so I can't wait to see what the other enemies look like. And we're going to be talking about all of the enemies that we did see, all of the robot, wonderful robot dinosaurs and much more in just a little bit. But for now, we'll have to take a short break. So in the meantime, why don't you go around your house and count how many broken mugs you can find? Because that was a thing you did in the first game when you were also trying to save the world, that very important thing you were doing. So you should go do that right now. And we'll be right back right after this break. Welcome back to IGN's Summer of Gaming, and a special post-show of Podcast Beyond after the Horizon Forbidden West State of Play from PlayStation, and I'm joined by my wonderful friends Mark Medina and Lucy O'Brien to talk about everything we saw. We've talked a little bit about the traversal and the combat a bit, and we're very excited about all of that, but I do want to touch on, of course, those wonderful dinosaurs. And they're not just dinosaurs. I know there are many other creatures within this robotic world, but I like calling them robot dinosaurs because it's fun. Please don't be mad at me, internet. I really love the design of some of the ones that we've seen here. The Claw Strider is for some of the B-roll that we have up right now, being ridden by some of the raiders. The Tremor Tusk battle we were talking about a little bit earlier. Lucy, what did you think of the design of the new creatures that we saw?
Yeah, I mean, you know, yes, robot dinosaurs is reductive, but dinosaurs were clearly the inspiration for the Claw Striders. I love how they are basically extremely armored velociraptors with chainsaw teeth. I mean, that's fairly terrifying. Again, their moveset is really fluid, just like a sort of like a velociraptor has typically been portrayed in like cinema. And I thought that particular encounter was, when she was running from them, was really quite terrifying, particularly because they sort of swarm on her like en masse. And I can imagine being chased and overwhelmed by a group of those, is going to be a real challenge. And obviously getting to higher ground or diving underwater is going to have to be a sort of choice you make. You know, in the original Horizon Zero Dawn, I remember stumbling across an area with machines that were way too advanced for where I was, like level wise. And I can imagine being swarmed by a group of those potentially in the early game will be quite terrifying. So I loved their design. I loved the big, what are we calling them? I want to call them the big Tremortusk, our big elephant friend. And again, I love that they pull from, you know, the animal kingdom and dinosaurs as well. And he was dangerous, but he looked like a big old elephant. Just a big old elephant with bits on him, you know.
Exactly.
But again, the size and the fact that he has so much sort of armory was clearly really cool. And yeah, I mean, again, it felt like we were just getting a tease of what they've cooked up for the second game, because the machines have always been the calling card, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yep. And you were saying in the last section of how, like, you know, all their Lego pieces, and I really, really feel like I would spend too much money on Lego sets of all of these if they made those official. I think I've seen some like fan mock-ups, but man, if you sold that as a line PlayStation, you have my probably hundreds of dollars, because Lego is very expensive. But Mark, I did want to hear from you on the design of these. We saw a few a little bit, you know, in the underwater section. I believe they were called burrowers, but we didn't get a great look at them. But Clawstrider and Tremortusk definitely took the spotlight. But what did you think of them, especially, you know, with the ensemble we already have?
Yeah, so we saw some new ones. We saw some familiar ones. When you look at something like the claw strategy and stuff like that, it's very reminiscent of the first game. The trimmer tusks, yeah, those things look terrifying. I do expect that we'll see more, like the alligators were in the first game. So I assume we'll start seeing more, like maybe we'll see Thunderjaws, and we've already seen some of the bird robots. I don't know. But I also want to mention, like, of the robots we saw in this gameplay demo, we didn't see a lot that they've shown already, like the little crab guys that were on the beach in the first reveal trailer, you know, 9 months ago, or the shell snappers, the big turtle guys. Like, there's still so many that we ended up not seeing that's what I'm really excited for. Is we've now gotten a glimpse of like all these CGI, like kind of crustacean kind of creatures, and now we're seeing some in the actual gameplay itself. But what Lucy mentioned earlier was you would walk into an area and you'd be like, whoa, this is way too hard for me. These monsters are way too big. And that's kind of what I'm excited for, is I'm excited what I'm seeing on screen, but I'm also very excited for what they're not showing us yet. Because, you know, Horizon had these areas, Zero Dawn had these areas that, you know, that area was meant to house this specific creature, you know, creatures that would go, you know, bury into the earth and stuff like that. And so, like, that's what I want to see, is to go into this area and you're like, oh, this is like a mini boss, and this is meant to be, you know, this area is tailored around this one creature. I also want to see more of how the humans interact with the different robots. Like, we saw humans riding the Striders, and we also saw humans riding the big Tremor Tusks. And so it's like, I'm interested to see how other creatures in the game are retrofitted for humans to be able to, and tribes to be able to ride them.
Yeah, that felt like a very telling moment, and especially when Aloy calls out the fact that the Raiders are on the Claw Striders and what that means. And I really, as Lucy was saying earlier, or I think we may have all been saying it, but like, I really hope we see someone on a flying robot at some point in footage. But I do want to talk about, you know, you were discussing sort of the idea of like in the original, things felt pretty... there could be areas where you come in and it felt very bespoke to the enemies you were going to fight, and the exciting revelations you would get by exploring that environment. We don't get a ton of the environment, I assume the entire game, but we do get this pretty pretty detailed chunk of the, as we learn a little bit into it, the San Francisco coastline by the Golden Gate Bridge, which has been a very big selling point image since the reveal trailer last year for the state of the world. You know, especially as people who have lived and worked within the Bay Area, it's very cool to see. I'm not expecting them to do anything too one-to-one of, you know, like, oh yeah, that overtaken block is where I used to get a sandwich in the morning. But I think it's going to be like a fun approximation of, you know, being in San Francisco 1,000 years after it's been through an apocalypse.
Yep.
Lucy, what did you think of the environmental detail that we saw, and specifically, you know, like the San Franciscan nature of it?
Well, I'm driving across the Golden Gate Bridge tomorrow, so there you go. Yeah, I mean, I think it looks stunning. I think that they can do a lot with just a series of iconic landmarks. You know, if you just have, like, if you see the bridge or you have a sunken Palace of Fine Arts, like, it's going to make me sort of giddy because this is a city that I know and love. But, you know, elsewhere, I just think that this whole area is stunning. And, you know, a lot of it is like, this is how beautiful it looks in a sort of minute-to-minute, like, traversal. But also just the promise of those larger structures in the background, you know, that's what really excites me. Like, I can't wait to see how they have, you know, how big that this game is. Like, we know it's going to be a bigger map than the first game, but we also know it's going to be on the PS4. So I'm not entirely sure, you know, exactly how big it's going to be. Yeah. But the scale is something that I'm really, really interested in sort of checking out, because Horizon Zero Dawn was the first PS4 game. I was going to say next gen. It was next gen at the time. PS4 game that sort of really made me go, oh, this is what the PS4 can do, right? Mm-hmm. Like, for me personally, I know others might have had a different experience, but it was like, this is what the PS4 can do. And I do kind of want a little bit of that for the PS5 with Horizon Zero Dawn. Again, I know it's being retrofitted.
Cross-gen.
Sorry, cross-gen. But I do want to see how far they push this sense of scale, because that is what Horizon Forbidden West is all about.
Yeah, I'm totally there with you. I can't wait to go watch this presentation after we record this in 4K the way it's meant to. That's always the funny thing about these state of plays, is like, you watch it and then you go actually watch how it's supposed to look, because it very clearly is a beautiful world. And I think, like, the rich detail of the more like tropical foliage that we're getting blended with the, you know, concrete man-made structures is a really nice detail that we didn't get. We got in certain pockets of the world in Horizon Zero Dawn, and I'm curious how much it's prevalent in Forbidden West, of how much we'll see this, like, nature retaking the land that man took from it. Mark, what did you think of this little pocket of the environment that we got to see?
Yeah, so it was really funny when it was starting, and she's giving that guy some water and stuff like that. And, you know, you're in a cutscene, and she's like, okay, I'm going to go find Aaron. And the camera starts to move, and all of us at the same time, we're like, oh, here, it's time for that, like, classic Sony moment. And sure enough, like, the graphics don't change. Nothing changes, but the camera just swoops behind Aloy, and she just starts running. And you're like, yeah, we're in engine here. This game is gorgeous. And something about Horizon Zero Dawn is every time you stopped moving and you, like, pause the game, like, it looked like a painting. And, you know, we got 5 hours of a countdown timer that was showing slow pans of the world, you know, leading up to this gameplay reveal. And it was like, there wasn't a moment that I didn't look over, because I had it running the entire 5 hours, that I wasn't like, wow, I cannot wait to be there. Yeah, as far as the San Francisco part, I think it's always fun for people like us who live in San Francisco or have lived in San Francisco, that, you know, it's kind of like that Watch Dogs 2 moment where you're like, oh, I can't wait to explore places that I recognize. I'm going to go find the sunken IGN office. I think this one's going to be a little different, only because, you know, a lot of this is underwater. The arts building and all that stuff, that was all, like, already sunken, and so you could see, like, you know, tiny little islands that people were theorizing that those aren't actually islands. They're the top of skyscrapers and stuff like that. So I don't think it's going to be as recognizable as something like Watch Dogs 2, where you're like, oh, wow, like there's the painted ladies. I don't think you're going to see stuff like that. But I do think that there are going to be definitely some moments, especially, you know, seeing the Golden Gate Bridge. Anyone who's seen it in real life knows that it's like it is really a sight to behold. So to see it in the game, and she's fighting the Trimmer Tusk, and you just see, you know, those giant arches in the background, I think is really, really cool. As far as detail goes, you know, they've said many times that this game is built for PlayStation 5 and then brought down to work on PS4. Obviously, there's still things that they're going to have to do to make it where, you know, it is able to run on that console. But I don't remember hearing anybody complain about Miles Morales on PS4. Like, from what people have said is that the game is still absolutely gorgeous. You can see this gameplay is running at 1080p30. I don't know if that was because of the stream, or if it's likely to have a performance mode versus a frame rate mode. I bet it will. But this game, it looks like a game that I'm like, I'm willing to sacrifice the frame rates and run at 30 so I can get the full HDR 4K resolution. Because, man, this game just, it just everything about it looks absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I think the thing that really excites me about what we're seeing from this footage too is the color palette of it, like brightness of the reds and the blues. And there was some of that definitely in Horizon, but you also would get a lot of darker areas and a lot of white because of the snow. And so I like what this seaside setting, bayside setting can bring to it, because there is just, as you were saying, Mark, it can look like a painting. Horizon can look just like you stop and you're looking at a painting, and it's beautiful. And I can't wait to see what they're able to accomplish with Horizon Forbidden West, especially on PS5, but hopefully on PS4 as well.
You're like in this jungle, and it's like crazy that snap when she goes from the jungle to underwater, and you're like, whoa, I'm like in a watercoloring painting now.
It's
sight to behold.
It's gorgeous, and we'll have a little bit more to talk about with Horizon Forbidden West and some other PlayStation news. But unfortunately, we're going to have to take a quick break, but don't worry, it's a very quick break. We'll be faster. Then you could fast travel in Horizon Zero Dawn, and I'm mostly saying that because it kind of took a little long to actually fast travel in that game. It was slow. It took a long time. Anyway, we'll be back soon. Please stick around. Welcome back to IGN Summer of Gaming, Horizon Forbidden West, State of Play post show with a special episode of Podcast Beyond. Those were a lot of words that I just said right there, and I apologize because names can be long sometimes, but here to help me sort through all of that are my good friends Mark Medina and Lucy O'Brien. Lucy and Mark, thank you so much for joining me. We've been talking a lot about Horizon Forbidden West's environment, the combat, the robot dinosaurs, and a lot more. Obviously, I'll just say briefly, of course, we're not really touching on story because there wasn't a lot of story there, and I have a feeling they're going to save a lot of the big reveals for how this plays into the overarching lore for when we play the full game. I will say it's definitely worth noting, of course, Erend of the Osaram tribe, I believe, shows up in a little bit of that gameplay, but for now, the rest of the story remains a mystery. What doesn't remain a mystery is some comments from all of you out there. As the stream was going on, one of our wonderful producers noted that, in fact, much of the YouTube chat is asking for a shark robot machine to fight, and the snap maws were already pretty terrifying for me. I don't know if I could handle an alligator, a shark as well. But
I disagree. I want a shark. Oh. One of the coolest things, I know I'm going off script a little bit, but one of the things that I love so much about Horizon is that it can be terrifying, right? Like, and one of the things that I loved was, you know, reaching those machines that were overpowering, like, and you were underleveled and having to run away. And I love this idea of a kind of like a Jaws scenario when you're traversing through the through underwater, especially because you have, I mean, I think that that's what they're going for. You've got like a dash ability underwater where you can actually, Aloy can propel herself from certain ledges. And I really love the idea of being, I know this sounds sick, of being like pursued underwater. I mean, it's freaking terrifying. And so I would love it if there were, you know, shark-like machines that would chase you. Yes. Give me it.
And the sharks will definitely have laser beams on their heads. Cue the Austin Powers B-roll.
Thank you, Mark. Oh, no. That was a test.
That was a test.
No, no quotes. No Austin Powers quotes, please.
Lucy, you're on the wrong show with Mark and me. If that's one of your qualifications for,
I've told them if me and Dornbush are on a show together, always have Austin Powers B-roll at the ready.
Yeah, we can. They let me down. We can buy the music rights, right? That shouldn't be a problem if we just start playing Super Bossa Nova. Anyway, I agree with you though, Lucy. I think like, you know, the first time you see a Stormbird in Horizon Zero Dawn, I'm forgetting the other one, but there's a sort of when you're in like the desert area and you come across just that gigantic robot enemy to fight, and it's just the sort of the awe and the spectacle and the fear of it is such a wonderful mixture of feelings that this game is able to evoke. And you're right, I don't want the shark because sharks scare me, but I also do want the shark because, as you were just saying, like Jaws, a Jaws moment against a giant robot shark would be so cool as like a mini boss encounter here. We were seeing some other comments, former, of course, Podcast Beyond member and now Sony Santa Monica writer. So obviously she's spilling all the secrets about Horizon, but Alana Pierce did mention, well, I am absolutely blown away by how Horizon Forbidden West looks graphically and aesthetically. Those gameplay updates are killer. The melee verticality and traversal options are just chef's kiss. Very excited. Thank you, Gorilla. And yeah, I think that'll be a lot of the stuff that the quality of life while playing the game that I'm really looking forward to, that like once you're 10 hours in, it will be hard to think that Horizon Zero Dawn didn't have those moves. I think it's going to be something this will probably achieve pretty easily.
That's something that was kind of bouncing around in my mind, is like, I fully expected the game to be gorgeous. We'd already seen the trailer. We know that Zero Dawn was gorgeous. I think what jumped out to me the most was, the really cool, you know, the limit break and the little parasail and all that stuff. And this parkour you're seeing on screen, like that's the kind of stuff that I'm like, yeah, the game was going to be gorgeous. That's fine. But damn, does it look fun to play?
Yeah. And that's definitely going to be an important upgrade because I think they've shown they can nail the beautiful world. But yeah, to really solidify the great foundation they built with the first game in Forbidden West, I think is going to be really exciting. Another comment from me just said, unlikely, but I'd love if they scrapped the open world and just had large levels like the one shown with a bunch of stuff. They did a curse that I can't say, packed into each one. Beach levels, snowy mountains, volcanic lands, etc. And my only thought is, I feel like the first game sort of did that. It was an open world, yes, but it kind of felt almost like Mario-esque, and like, oh, I'm going to the snowy region. Oh, here's the desert. Oh, here's the city in the middle of it all. I feel like we're going to get a little bit of that here. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I have to disagree with me. I'm sorry. It's a great, you know, suggestion. But for me, and I keep coming back to this. I know I'm beating the drum, but like, I do love the idea of just stumbling across something that you're not meant to. I mean, but you are meant to. That's all part of the experience, right? It's all part of like, okay, this is not something, I have not been guided to this area. This is something that I have stumbled upon, right? And that is so much part of the thrill of this world, is that you feel like you were just sort of put into it. Like it wasn't designed around you. And all the best game world building makes you feel like that it was not designed around you. You just happened to be there. And that's what I love so much about the open world nature of Horizon.
Yeah, to me, Horizon is meant to be open world. You know, when you get those moments with Last of Us and Uncharted, and you're like, yeah, these are very like scripted, very beautiful, dense areas. That's not really what I would want Horizon to be. I like Horizon's big open worlds that you can kind of go wherever you want. And you can, you know, we talked about it earlier, kind of stumble upon an area where you're like, whoa, I'm not supposed to be here yet, and kind of stuff like that. But I do think they keep the biomes fresh enough where it's like you're in snow, you're in desert. Right. You know, the first trailer showed a ton. This is like a jungly beach area. But even in the countdown leading up, we saw snow areas. We saw a desert area. We saw, you know, familiar looking kind of Zero Dawn area. So it's like, I think there's going to be enough of a variation there for people.
Yeah. And I'm certainly interested to see what they do with San Francisco proper and what parts of the city remain and what don't, and how you can play around in there. That was something that Last of Us, obviously a much sooner apocalypse, but did very well with the Pacific Northwest. So I'm curious to see what they do with that sort of topography and all that. But we'll largely leave, I think, our Horizon Forbidden West thoughts there. Obviously, we didn't get a release date. This is our first look at gameplay, so we'll have probably plenty more to discuss about Horizon in the months to come. I hope not too many months, because I really, really want to play this game. It looked awesome, and I'm very excited about what we saw. But as this is an episode of Podcast Beyond, do want to bring in just a little bit of other PlayStation news that dropped this week that thankfully dropped before we recorded the show, which is, of course, the fact that we'll be getting new PlayStation Plus games next week. The PS Plus games I accidentally wrote down for July because I don't know what month it is. But for June, the three games that we'll be getting as part of PlayStation Plus are Operation Tango, which will be a brand new for PlayStation online cooperative game, Star Wars Squadrons, the previously released Star Wars game that's meant to put you in the pilot seat of both the Empire and the Rebel Alliance, as well as Virtua Fighter 5 Showdown, which I believe is a remastered version of Virtua Fighter 5. I don't know the franchise, and I apologize to any Virtua Fighter fans who are going to get immediately upset about me saying that, but it will actually be available for 2 months, June and July. So yeah, you'll have 2 months to be able to have that one until Monday, August 2nd. I guess I'll start with Star Wars Squadrons. I haven't actually finished the campaign, but I got hooked a little bit on the multiplayer. I think this is a smart one to add because it is fully playable in PSVR, which is as our writer Tom Marks for the review said, like, this, that's the way. If you can play this game, it is so cool to be able to play it in VR. I don't know if either of you have had a chance to.
Not in VR, but yeah. I had fun with Squadrons. I was surprised because that type of there's this old lady part of me that wants to say that type of spaceship game doesn't really like typically appeal to me, but I had great fun with it. So I'm stoked that more people get their hands on this one.
Yeah.
I've actually never played it. The only thing I remember of the game is every view angle is like you're at the bottom of a Pringles can. And you're just seeing,
because you're in the cockpit, and you're
because you're like in the cockpit. You just see the circle. I know people love it. I'll probably check it out.
It's definitely worth a look. if you have any sort of like cursory interest, especially in like being able to pilot a Star Wars ship, they do it very well. And then Operation Tango will be a brand new multiplayer online game. It's asymmetrical challenges, essentially, where one of you is a hacker and another of you is a spy and you're working together. You have to have a microphone to be able to talk to each other. That might be a fun one to do some co-op with for a Beyond Let's Play or something. But we'll have to check that one out in June, not July, as I wrote down in the run of show, you silly man, Jonathan. But that's going to pretty much wrap us up for this episode. Mark and Lucy, thank you so much for joining me. People can find you both on Twitter. Lucy, you're at Luce O'Brien, and Mark, you're at Mark Medina.
There it is.
At
right
Mark
there.
_ Medina, excuse me.
Yep.
There's the space. And of course, I'm at JM Dornbush. Normally, you can find myself, Lucy, and occasionally our guest star, Mark, who was recently on to talk about Returnal as well, as Brian Altano and Max Scoville on Podcast Beyond every Wednesday, normally at 3 p.m. Pacific, on IGN, on YouTube, and your favorite podcast services around the world. But that's otherwise going to pretty much wrap us up for our Horizon Forbidden West State of Play post show as part of Podcast Beyond. It's a very long title, but I appreciate you all being here. And even though this show's over, IGN's Summer of Gaming is really just getting started. So much has happened today, but we're just getting started. All summer long, IGN will bringing you tons of gaming news, exclusive reveals, and so much more. So please join us tomorrow for our coverage of Sony's State of Play. Why does it say that here? Please continue to join us on June 10th for the Summer Game Fest kickoff live, June 11th for the IGN Expo, June 12th through 15th for E3, and of course, August 25th through 27th, a little further out, will be Gamescom, but there will be plenty more happening in between. A little thing called E3 is back, and we'll be back there this year and covering every press conference and breaking down some of the biggest news in the industry. IGN Summer of Gaming is here for you all summer long, so catch us please on IGN, YouTube, your smart TVs, pretty much anywhere you can think of. So thank you all so much for watching, and we'll see you all soon right here on IGN.
Welcome. You've got a digital folklore.
Monsters lurk in the shadowy corners of the internet. our darkest fears peer back at us from the depths of the web. We can...
Hey!
Holy,
hey.
Linda Blair.
Are you all right?
No. Can we maybe do this a different tone? Hey there, I'm Perry Carpenter.
And I'm Mason Amadeus.
On our podcast, Digital Folklore, we explore monsters, memes, and everything in between.
Looking at our digital expressions through the lens of folklore, we break down the stories and communities we create online.
And we try to make it a lot of fun. The show is presented in an audio drama style with a narrative and soundscape that's designed to draw you in.
We weave insightful research and expert interviews with humor and storytelling. Come check it out.
Search Digital Folklore wherever you get your podcasts.